So last week we finished a 13-part series called Built for Bliss. Today we're going to start a 2-part series which has to do with time, our most valuable asset. It's called A Matter of Time, and it's based on the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder, Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Imagine every day you start the day and you have a deposit in your account that automatically goes into your bank account of $86,400. There's only one condition that goes into your account every single day. The only condition is that you have to spend all of the money by the end of the day. Otherwise, you don't get it back again. So that's basically our situation, because every day we get up, we've got about, give or take, about 86,400 seconds in every day of our life. And we've got one chance. We've got one chance to use each one of those seconds profitably. And if we miss that chance, we miss a chance that will never come back, that will never be given to us on a second occasion. We don't get a second chance, we only get one chance. So it's our daily deposit. Such valuable time, this is what Srila Prabhupada himself says in his purports to the Srimad Bhagavatam, such valuable time should be cautiously spent, because even a second passed away imperceptibly cannot be replaced. Has anyone spent time imperceptibly? Have you sat down to watch American Idol and then all of a sudden 90 minutes of your life, your valuable life, was gone and you didn't even notice its passing? It was imperceptible. You actually thought you used it in an entertaining way. But actually, life is about a little bit more than being entertained. Life is meant to be used in a profitable way. I had a brother. He's passed away himself now, younger than I was, and he was an alcoholic. And as much as 2 years would go by, he was out in California, a vet from the Marines. He was out in California, and sometimes 2 years would go by, and my parents wouldn't hear a word from him. They wouldn't know whether he was living or dead. And finally, out of the blue, he'd call, and he'd be surprised. What's the big fuss about? What's the big fuss about? He didn't realize that 2 years of his life had passed in inebriation. It had passed without perceptivity. And he thought, well, wasn't it just the other day that I talked to you last? No, Bo, it was 2 years since you called. Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that so much water had passed under the bridge. So that's the effect of intoxication. And aren't we intoxicated when we sit before the screen and we get ghostly haunted? I mean, isn't that what we're opening ourselves up for when we turn on the screen and all those millions and millions of dollars of shapely skin and glossy cosmetics and glittery dresses and leg and music and all? Isn't that what it's supposed to do, is basically take over you and obviate the purpose for which you were created and cause you to miss valuable seconds of your life, which are men as opportunities to be used much more profitably? We're going to take a valuable second now to see if we can do something to get our message across more effectively. So it passes away imperceptibly and it cannot be replaced, even exchanged for thousands of golden coins amassed by hard labor. Every second of human life is meant for making an ultimate solution to the problems of life. That means the solution to the problem of repetition of birth and death and revolving in the cycle of 8,400,000 species of life. See, the human form of life is different than the life of the animals. The animals have no higher calling than to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. That's basically all they have to do. Jai over there, if he gets something to eat, he goes to sleep, which I think he's doing just now, nodding off a little bit. Mating and defending, then that's basically it. He's basically achieved that everything that you're meant to achieve in the body of a bird. If a bear, or better example, we got this turtle donated to us last fall, and Vaibhavi decided, and she was correct, that the turtle's meant to hibernate, and so she put him in a box, and he went to sleep for about 4 months. He went to sleep for about 4 months. Well, that's what turtles do. You know, they go to sleep during the winter. Oh, it's getting cold and uncomfortable and chilly. I think I'll just go to sleep and wake up at the holy festival, you know, when it's time for spring, you know. And we might think that's a good idea, but we can't do that. We can't sleep for 4 months and slow down our heartbeat and not eat or not nourish ourselves. But if you're in a turtle, it's just, business as usual, or a bear. Jai, if his wings weren't clipped, without even giving a second thought, he'd just fly up and fly around and so on and so forth. I notice birds are quite awkward. Have you ever noticed that? You'd think because they're so graceful in the air, they'd also have a certain grace on the ground. But at least once a day, we have an African gray, we have a macaw, and we have a cockatoo. And at least once a day, you'll hear this, ah! And they've fallen off their perch and landed at the bottom, and you're like that. And I thought about that. I said, well, why aren't birds more graceful in terms of their talons than they are flying? And the reason is they don't need it, because their strong point is flying. So if they're out in nature and their wings aren't clipped, and they like take a misstep, which they do a lot more often than you think, like, woo, that first step was a dilly. You and I would end up, after bouncing, we'd end up at the bottom of the stairs with a broken leg. But the bird just sweats, he starts to fall, he just opens his wings and he's off, and, it's no problem. So it doesn't matter if he's awkward, if he makes a misstep in nature. If he steps off the top rung of a tree that's 90 foot in the air, he just opens his wings and just flies away. See? Birds can do that. Those are the strong points of turtles and birds and so on and so forth. But what is it? We can't do any of that stuff. In fact, compared to the animals, we're awkward, we're ill-equipped, we're kind of silly, actually, like gooses or something. But there is one thing that we can do that the animals cannot do, and that is achieve self-realization. That is to realize that this human form of life is uniquely suited with our intellect, with our intelligence, with the scriptures that are available to us, with the incarnations of Godhead, like Lord Jesus Christ, Lord Krishna, and Lord Buddha, to make a final solution to the problems of life, the repetition of birth, death, and disease, and old age. So whereas the unique prerogative of the turtle is to sleep, and the bird is to fly, and the mole is to burrow, the unique prerogative of a soul in the human form of life is to make sure that you never take birth again. That after this death, and we're all going to die, and unless we're purified in consciousness, then that impure consciousness, that consciousness which is still rife with material appetites and desires, will bring us back into the womb of another mother. It might be animal or vegetable or mineral or demigod. But the desires that we have, which are still material, will drag us back into another womb to undergo another cycle of birth, death, disease, and old age. And that will go on, and in most cases probably has been going on already for perhaps hundreds of thousands of lives. And the simple fact is, as long as you have material desires, you'll have a material body as an instrument to fulfill those desires. So the human form of life, the seconds, minutes, and hours of the human form of life are meant for purification. God is the supreme pure, and if we want to approach God, we need to be pure ourselves. If we want to mix with fire, we have to become like fire ourselves. So when we come into the human form of life, what is our most valuable asset? What is the greatest asset that we have to work with? And it is time. It is time. We're born in different economic conditions. Some of us are born in Biafra and we'll never even see a dollar. We'll work a month to get the equivalent of a dollar. Some of us are born in America with a silver spoon in our mouth. And just by being born in America, that qualifies you as amongst the 5% richest people in the world. So we all have different amounts of money. We all have different economic advantages or disadvantages, but basically we're all equal. It's all very democratic in terms of the time that we have in our lifetime. And here's how it breaks down. See, I did my homework. 25,550 days of your life. Moody Blues. Anyone remember Moody Blues? Okay, that really dates me. Yeah, and you guys too. They had a little known song. Wasn't one of their most well-known songs, but it's called 22,000 Days. And that was their guesstimate about the lifespan. Here it's 25,550 days, a little more optimistic. During that time, we spend 23 years sleeping, 17 years working, 11 years, now this makes me sad, watching TV and playing, 6 years traveling, 6 years eating. Oh, now I know what you guys were chuckling about. Yeah, men spend an average of 2 years getting ready to go out, and women spend an average of 19 years getting ready to go out. So the moral of this is that you don't have as much time as you think. You don't have as much time as you think. If you live that many days, those are subtracted by those factors. And time is not cooperative. Time is not cooperative. When you're young, you want time to speed up. Like these young guys here, they can't wait to, you know, get their driver's license and, you know, stay up a little later and not have to be in home at a certain curfew. And, you know, being able to go up to their favorite girl and say, would you like me to pick you up on Friday night and we'll go to the show? You know, can't wait for that. And so time just seems not to go fast enough for them. They can't wait until that moment arrives when they get independence and go out on their own. And then after you've done that, and you're married, had kids, and so on and so forth, in the sunset years of your life, time seems to go too fast. It seems to go slow, like a little train that's chugging its way uphill in the first half of your life. And then the second half of your life, it seems to have crested the hill and gone downhill, and somehow or other the brakes went out. And you say, whoa, you know. At one point you're saying, oh, can't we go faster? And then after the age of 40 or 50 or so, you're saying, whoa, you know, stop pushing me. I don't want it to go this fast. There was that song. Have you ever heard? I'm really dating myself, but I don't care because I'm not this body. You know, I remember when I was a young person, this song was really popular. I think it was Burl Ives, who himself was like a septuagenarian. And he would sing, and this is kind of like the theme song of the retirees, you know. This is like the national anthem of people who are over the age of 50. He would sing, lingering sunset, stay a little longer by the lonely sea. Beautiful girl, walk a little slower when you walk by me. But the problem is that girl, as soon as she sees that old guy, you know, she speeds up to get past him as fast as she can, you know. So time is not cooperative. Time is not cooperative, especially if you're accustomed to misusing it. So life is a trust, and we have certain gifts when we come into this human form of life. Time is the most valuable gift. Another gift is money. Another gift are each and every one of us, our unique abilities. Yesterday we had a colors festival, and after the colors went up, it was quite obvious that no two people were alike. Colors have a way of arranging themselves in different patterns and different configurations and different colors. And some people were more chartreuse, and some people more green, some more purple, and some more pink. And it was obvious, all the variety that exists in our world. Every living being is created unique and different from another. There are no carbon copies. And each one of us is very special. We have unique talents and abilities that are created by God, and He would like to see His investment in us, the investment that He put into us of creativity and craftsmanship. He would like to see a return on His investment. And so He would like to see us use our God-given talents and abilities in His service. And there's no lack of it. The festival we put on yesterday, I mean, I worked on it for a year. I'm already working on next year's festival with notes and talking to people, come back and getting the sound all worked out. I worked on it for a year. My wife worked on it for most of a year. We order the colors for next year within the next month or so. We're going back and forth between the supplier and the shippers and all like that. And as we get closer and closer to the festival, more and more people are required. More and more people come on board. And the days before the festival, there's like 40 or 50 people involved, giving at least an hour or two of their time. The night before, like Wendy stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning trying to make enough bags to color so we don't have a riot in the afternoon. And she had a crew of people. And these guys were at the Booth Music Studio downtown. They were rehearsing till like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night because the musicians are local. He's from New York. He's from all the way up from Orem, Minneapolis, and so they had to work together, and that was why the music concert was the best we've ever had. So, and then we had at least 100 volunteers working during the day of the festival, and then everyone participated. It wasn't like you come and you sit down and you're just passive. Everyone who came was part of the festival. They threw the colors and they chanted and they danced. And Govindadat, I think it was Govindadat, or it was Kurt, the guitarist, he said that he actually was thinking of putting earplugs in his ears because the response when we would chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, when we would chant and the audience would respond, he said it was so loud and so enthusiastic, it was actually hurting his ears. This wasn't the musicians with an amped up speaker system. This was just live people with no amperage at all shouting at the top of their lungs. So everyone has those abilities. And we're also put in certain relationships. You know, have you ever found out that your own weaknesses can be compensated for by your cousins or your brothers or your sisters or your parents? And so we become stronger. We're better together. And we assume strength of the unit and groups that we're with. And if we choose badly our friends, we assume the weaknesses and the vulnerabilities and the behavior patterns that they do us too. And we also have freedom of choice. Now in America, we see that freedom of choice for a lot of people brings ruination. We see that, you know, America's a land of freedom. That means freedom means freedom to do right and freedom to do wrong. So in no other country in the world do we see the principle of freedom misused more than we do in America. In no other country in the world do we see more crime, more drug abuse, more despondency, more depression, more prescription drug abuse because of the principle of freedom. But the freedom to destroy your life and to make bad choices is also the freedom to make good choices as well. So in America, nowhere else in the world do we see more brilliance. Do we see more interesting, more creative, more dynamic, more energetic people? And both things come along as a result of freedom of choice. It's just a question of whether you're going to use it or whether you're going to abuse it. It's an opportunity to court disaster or it's an opportunity to achieve brilliance. If you're in the prison house, you can say that all the inmates in the prison, they're good people. They're good people. I mean, they haven't committed any crimes recently. They get up at the same time. They go to bed at the same time. They haven't harassed anyone. But because there's no free will involved, because they're incarcerated, because they're obliged and coerced and forced into that routine, and they don't actually have the freedom to do wrong. They don't have the freedom to prey and on honest citizens because they're incarcerated. So whatever good that they're engaged in is just artificial, because good really has to be an exercise of free will. And the fact they wouldn't be in prison in the first place if they weren't chronic abusers of free will. So they're not good. I mean, they might not be doing bad, but they're not good, because you're only good when you use your free agency and the choices that are offered to you in a positive way. So life is a trust, and depending on how we use or abuse our abilities, our next life, our future is determined. And it's also temporary. This life is 60, 70 years. It's just like that. Time goes by so fast, but depending upon our use of the time, we're going to spend eternity. We're either going to take another birth and go for another round of birth, death, disease, and old age, or we're going to purify our consciousness, go back home, back to Godhead, never again to take birth in this material world. So depending on how we use the days and minutes and hours of our life in the short 60 or 70 years, we can achieve the highest benefit. We can achieve eternal life full of bliss and knowledge. And it's not much of a price to pay. 40 or 60 years is nothing. And eternity is, I mean, if you took a piece of yarn and you wrapped it around the earth, you wrapped it 25,000 miles around the earth, and that represented eternity, and you took this life in comparison, it wouldn't even be a centimeter. It wouldn't even be a centimeter. So if you use this life profitably, you will get eternal life if you exercise the trust that is placed in you. But although this life is temporary, there are tests. You know, did you use properly what was given you? And the most valuable thing that's given us is time. So much of what our future will be is going to be determined by how we use the most valuable gift of all, time. Time management is life management. And actually, you know, people say, I don't have time for this, I don't have time for that. Here, you know, you've all got your lives, some of your students, some of your family people, And you're thinking, you know, this guy, I've come to the Christian for the first time. Like, I don't have enough on my plate. You know, I've got studies. I've got a part-time job. I've got a fiance. I'm spread all over the place. I got to keep so many people happy. I don't need this. I don't need some guy telling me that I need to use my time in such and such a way, because my time is already booked up. I'm sorry. But most cases, the problem is not lack of time. We've all got plenty of time to achieve whatever we want in life. The problem is the choices we make. The problem is how we choose to spend seasons and seasons of our life. And time management is something that can be learned. If you say, well, I'm just killing time. What you doing, man? What's happening, man? Well, we're just hanging around, you know, chewing some gum, watching the tube, you know, checking out the babes, you know, just killing time, you know. Well, killing time means that you're killing your life, because your life is a certain amount of time, and if you're killing it, and if you've no better way to spend it, then killing your life is killing time. How many times have you spent $10, walked into the movie theater, spent two and a half hours, and walked out and said to your partner, that was a stupid movie. That was a stupid movie. You know? How many times have you done that? So that's basically a form of self-destruction, suicide. So good life, profitable life, a productive life, it's not a question really of time, but it's a question of choices. Unlike money, as I said, we all have the same amount of time. And people who get more done, they don't have more time, they just make better choices. And the pressure that builds up, I can't do that, I don't want to do that, doesn't come from lack of time, but it comes from a lack of poor choices. It comes from making poor choices. This is what Prabhupada says about the issue in the Srimad Bhagavatam purports. A conditioned soul lives in a particular body for a fixed measurement of time, and is recommended in the scriptures that within that small measure of time, one has to finish Krishna consciousness and thus gain release from the influence of the time factor. But unfortunately, those who are not in Krishna consciousness are carried away by the strong power of time without their knowledge, as clouds are carried away by the wind. How many times do you commit yourself to an hour, a day, a week, without even thinking about it, without even realizing the importance of the decision you're about to make? Someone calls you up and say, hey, come on over, you know, we're hanging out, you know, it's New Year's Eve, let's go tip a few, you know. Yeah, sure, okay. How many times have we said that? How many times have we just frittered away valuable time of our life without really thinking about it? And one decision leads to another decision, leads to another decision, leads to another decision. So we arrive at the autumn season of our life, never having accomplished anything, never having fulfilled our purpose, because we've committed to insignificant, profitless things, which then entangled us and stole our most valuable asset. It's like, why is the butterfly trapped in the cocoon? The filaments of the cocoon are of his own making. No one forced him in there. He spun the filaments, and the filaments ended up wrapping him up and constricting him. He has no one else to blame except himself. So it is our choices and our decisions that tie us up unprofitably. And even there's good things. There's good things. There's Greenpeace, you know. There's Save the Earth. There's Earth Save. There's all kinds of good causes that we can commit ourselves to, but which are not going to bring us any closer to transcending birth, death, disease, and old age. We can even commit ourselves to good causes when actually the human form of life is meant to commit yourself to great causes. Here again, the example is given that the government gives everyone facilities for governmental action and management, but by one's own choice, one creates a situation which obliges him to exist under different types of consciousness. God is very kind. He gives everyone equal chance, but by the resultant actions of one's own karma, one suffers or enjoys the material world. The government does not favor any segment of the population. The government does not favor or give undue opportunity to any person. The roads, the facilities, the stores, the shops, the government services are equally available to everyone. But in spite of the equal opportunity which the government offers, we see people in vastly different situations. Medically, relationally, financially, emotionally, They're all over the map. Even though the opportunities, the facilities are equal to each and every one of us as Americans, there are vast differences in living status and standard of living because of our some take advantage of what's there and some fail to do so. So time management is a skill that can be learned, what we try to emphasize in our talks on Sunday evening. Our skills that you can then take and use and apply to your life on Monday morning in a profitable way. And we hope to do that in these two series of talks on time by encouraging you to analyze how your time is spent, prioritize the things that you do, economize, and utilize. So we'll get through at least one of these today and maybe deal with the last three next week. Analyze your lifestyle. Analyze it sensibly, intelligently, purposefully. Look at it carefully. If you want to save time, figure out how you're losing time first. Find the leaks. How many times have you just said, well, I'll watch the news. I'll watch the news. It's like 6 o'clock. Let me watch the news. And before you know it, you're trying to think, well, should I stay up and watch Letterman or not? That's a leak, right? That's a leak. You know, if you want to get up in the morning and feel full of spiritual energy and be able to chant your rounds and think of God and read scriptures, what activity in the evening is going to be most conducive to that? Going to bed at 8 or 9 o'clock and just not turning on the TV in the first place? Or staying up to 11 or 12 o'clock and watching Letterman? Some guy wakes up in the morning with a headache. Oh my gosh, you know, I got this headache. And his wife is in the kitchen, you know, moving the pots and with the spatula, and he's, you're killing me. You're killing me. Can you stop making all that noise in the kitchen? And the kids are getting ready for school, you know, running up and down the stairs and banging doors. And, kids, you're torturing me. You're torturing me. Can you be quiet? You know. Now, he's blaming his wife and his kids for causing him pain. He's blaming his wife and kids for causing him pain. But who actually caused the pain? Why does he wake up in the morning with a headache? Because he was drinking last night. Or because he was watching TV till 1 o'clock in the morning, and at 7 o'clock in the morning, when it's time to get up and get ready for it, he's not exactly feeling too chipper. Well, duh. You know, duh. If you analyze, you'll see that the immediate causes are not necessarily the real causes of your suffering. And you'll see that others, circumstances, and other people are not the cause of your suffering, but you yourself, by your poor choices, are the cause of your suffering. And if you analyze, you'll begin to get a handle on how to make the right choices so that you eliminate your suffering and then stop the blame game. Oh, why me? Why me? What did I do to deserve this? Well, you did everything. You did everything. Everything that's coming on you is a result of your own poor choices. So find the leaks. And if you don't know that your life, and if you can't think of any things, if you can't identify these things, then your life is already out of control. This is what Prabhupada says here. The swine, how do you like our graphic, huh? The swine who eat the night soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Similarly, the foolish worker will untiringly continue to hear of the sense enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world, but will have very little time to hear about the eternal living force that moves the material world. See, the difference between someone who's aimed for liberation, who's using their time properly, and someone who's not using their time properly. Someone who's not using their time properly, if they hear two people gossiping about a third people, they say, what was that? What did you say? I didn't quite hear that. Could you repeat that? Oh, really? And someone's, oh, no kidding. I thought you. Her husband is like, what? The ears are just like perk, you know, any sort of gossip. You know, what is it Prabhupada called? The sense enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world. They're just like so inspired to hear of the sense enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world. Now, when someone who's a transcendentalist hears people talking, when a transcendentalist hears that, they have no interest whatsoever. It's like garbage. It's like no interest. But if you hear people talking, you know, dehi no shmiya da dehi, from boyhood to youth and into old age, soul and so on and so forth, then, oh, what is this? Something eternal, something imperishable, something germane, something with which my soul resonates. What did you say again? Same reaction, but the different subject matter. The crows, if they see garbage or roadkill, they're like, wow, you know, hubba, 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 there's a dead thing on the road there. Let's party, you know. And the swans have no attraction whatsoever. They're birds, but they're not birds of a feather. The swans are hankering after beautiful lakes with nice foliage and lotus flowers and things like that. So they have different proclivities. They have different tastes. And those people who are aimed for transcendence, their ears prick up. Their hair stands on end. They get goosebumps on their body at hearing the recitation of the Lord's holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You know, sometimes, you know, we think at the end of the week, you know, we think, well, I was pretty good. You know, I'm on a diet. I'm 80 pounds overweight. And I need to lose 40 pounds. My doctor told me to lose 40 pounds. Otherwise, I'm going to die of a heart attack in a couple years. So, you know, I was pretty good. You know, I was pretty good. But if you'd analyzed, if you'd noted down what you ate, if you'd actually noted it down and analyzed it, you would realize when you tally it up at the end of the week, you ate 82 potato chips and 48 chocolate chip cookies. So you weren't nearly as good as you thought. And you weren't nearly doing as good as you thought. And you weren't on track to health at all. You were going the opposite way. But your impression was differently. I remember one time I visited home as a devotee in Pennsylvania. And I stayed a few days with my parents. And you know how people always say when you're a vegetarian, they say, yeah, vegetarian, I don't eat much red meat. You know, so many people say, I don't eat much red meat. And my father said the same. I don't eat much red. I can't even remember when I eat red meat. You know. So we're going to the airport, and the plane was late. So my parents decided to stay with me, and let's eat something. You know. So we went to the buffet, right? And my father went first, and he's got his tray, and he's got various choices there. He says, I'll take beef. I'll take some rare roast beef. And I realized he was eating it, and he didn't even realize. I don't even know. It just didn't compute. You know, He actually thought I'd never eat red meat. And then a half an hour later, he was ordering red meat without a thought. See what I'm saying? But if you analyze it, and you write it down, and you do things consciously, and you consider the trust and the time, the expenditure of time, you would actually have a proper and accurate idea of where you stand on terms of the path of liberation. And how much time you spend in order to get it. This is pretty self-evident. In a week, you know, your average student, teenager, spends 10 hours on Facebook, 5 hours on Gmail. I don't know what's Hulu. I don't even... I can truthfully say I've never spent any time on that. I don't even know what it is. And then Hacker News, 2 hours. This is a graphic... This is the soul. This is the soul. The soul is represented by the birds. One time Willie Nelson sang a song about reincarnation, and he talked about a bird going over the horizon. A bird arriving on the eastern horizon, flying through the sky, and then disappearing on the western horizon. And that was a nice metaphor for the soul. The soul comes into this body. Most of you are young. Soul came into the body, maybe 17, 18, 20, 25 years ago. Right now the soul is passing through the various phases of this life, the various changing skies of this body from youth to middle age to old age and so on and so forth. And then at death, the soul will disappear. But just like the bird is existence did not begin when it appeared on the horizon, nor did the existence of the bird end when it went off the horizon. It was only that you saw the bird from a certain point to a certain point. But the existence of the bird preceded and succeeded the extent of your vision. So the bird was in fact, and so the bird as a spiritual end is eternal. And we're meant to live eternal life without any death, without any birth, without any disease, and without any old age. But instead of that, we've basically locked ourselves in to a cage of temporality, misery, ignorance. We've locked ourselves in the cage. So in the course of analyzing our life to see how we're using time, we need to ask ourselves some tough questions. At any given time, especially something that's a regular routine activity, whether it's hanging out with your friends or the courses that you've elected to take in the university, or the woman that you think you might want to marry and spend your life with. These are decisions that are going to determine whole seasons of your life. And so you need to look very carefully. Someone called me up last week, and this isn't as uncommon as you thought. Someone just called me up. We were getting ready for the Holi Festival. It was Wednesday. I was cooking. I cooked 35 trays of vegetables. Started off cooking palak paneer last Saturday. I cooked palak paneer, 4 or 5 trays. That's spinach with homemade cheese. Delicious. I cooked it from Saturday to Wednesday, and it freezes. It blends itself. So we put it in the freezer. And then Thursday, Friday, I was cooking peas and homemade curd, which doesn't freeze very well, so we're just going to refrigerate it. So someone calls me on Wednesday, right? Says, do you do marriages? I said, yeah, we do marriages. Can you do a marriage for me? I said, yeah, just, you know, email me and make an appointment and all like that. Well, I want it kind of sooner than that. I said, well, when do you want it? He said, this afternoon. I said, you got to be kidding me. You want to get married? You call me up and you want me to marry you this afternoon? I mean, you're out of your mind, buddy. Get some counseling, you know. Call me after the festival is over. We'll sit down with your fiancé, and I'll awaken you. I'll make you aware of some basic facts of your life. The most prominent of which is time is very valuable. And before you make a decision like that, you should analyze very carefully and very scrutiny. Do I want to spend the next 25 years of my life with this person? You better be darn sure. And generally, if you're from India, the average engagement, tell me if I'm wrong, dear Rabbi, lasts 2 years. You talk to an Indian couple, they say, we're going to get married. When are you getting married? Well, we're planning the wedding for 2012. When I do weddings for Indian couples, it's at least 18 months to 24 months that I get notice. And not only does that show that there's premeditation and seriousness put into it, but it's all 18, 20 months is enough time to know if find out if this is not the person you want to spend your life, and then you can call it off if you want. So these are tough questions, and we need to ask ourselves, is this the best use? And most importantly, is Krishna pleased with my time? Is Krishna pleased with my time? Is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, from whom I've gotten my talents, my abilities, my aptitude, my intelligence, who's given me the human form of life, am I satisfying him by the use of my time? And in fact, you have to be aware of the fact that whatever time we have is given to us by God. And it's meant to be used in his service. And there's that old saying, if you don't use it, you'll lose it. How many of you can guarantee that you're going to be alive 24 hours from now? How many of you can guarantee, can make an ironclad guarantee that 24 hours from now you're going to be alive? You know, a couple years ago when the terrorists went into the Taj Motel in Bombay, have any of you been to Bombay? You know that, have you seen the Taj Motel? It's like magnificent. It's right on the Bay of Bengal, the gateway of India. It's an icon. And the guards at the door, you know, with their mustaches, and they pop like that, and open the door for you and like that, you know. And it's like, it's unimaginable. It's unimaginable that would be invaded and bullets and riddled with bullets. And especially that 12-year-old girl from Virginia or something that was staying at the Taj with her father, she had no idea that when they checked in one day that was the last day of her life, that she would be gunned down with all the other guests. So what is guaranteed you? What guarantees do you have that you even have 24 hours of your life? But I'll tell you, the best thing you can do in light of the fragility of the lifespan, you can use the time that you have in the service of God. So if you are to get a life extension, it will be on the basis that you're using your life and your time for the purpose for which you were created. If you are a financial advisor and someone gives you a certain amount of money to invest, and they say, I'll check back with you in 6 months. And they check back with you in 6 months. And they say, well, how's my investment doing? And you say, well, I'm not really sure. You know, I'm not really a very organized person. I haven't really been tracking it very well. So do you think he's going to reinvest with you? Do you think he's even going to leave that capital in your hands? No, he's not. He's going to take it away. But if he comes back a year later and says, how's my portfolio? You say, well, we've got Fidelity in this fund, and we've got the Morgan fund, and this has got 2% like that, and he's tracking it very well. Then not only are you going to leave that capital with him, but you're going to invest more. So how are you spending your life? God has given you. We don't know. We don't know exactly how much time he's given us. But what he's given us, how are we using it? And are we accountable to him for it? Can we stand up and say, Lord, I know that you've given me so much time, and I've used it this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, in such a way that God is pleased. Prabhupada says again, those who want to live forever without changing their bodies. Does that sound nice? Anyone say, nah, that doesn't sound too good to me. Anyone not up for that? Would you like to live forever without changing your bodies? Would you like not to have to grow old and die? I was talking on the stage. Kurt told me, you know, all the little homilies I gave on stage yesterday. Kurt said, he said, I really like that message you gave about the Sistine Chapel. Did you hear that? Yeah, did you like that too? I said, God, who is God and what are the qualifications of God? God is eternal, isn't it? By definition, he's eternal. If he's eternal, it means he doesn't die. If he doesn't die, it means he doesn't grow old. So what's the best idea of God that we can conjure up in our Western society? When you think of God, who do you think of? What image comes to mind? And failing an accurate or a better image, I think most of us, by default, we think of what Michelangelo painted on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, the old guy with the white hair and the beard. And he can't even stand up for himself. He's kind of lying down. There's a bunch of angels holding him on what looks like a clamshell. And he's like really tired, you know, and then he's touching Adam. And Adam seems to be getting some life like that. I mean, you know, would you want to spend eternity with an old guy like that? I mean, would you want to spend eternity with that guy? See what I'm saying? He's changing his body, you know. Maybe once he was young. He's no longer young. He's growing old. He's getting wrinkles. If you can grow old, you can die. So I don't know who that guy is, but he's not God. Because God doesn't change his body. He has an eternal, spiritual, youthful body. Because he's God. That means he's all powerful. He controls everything. Nothing controls him. There's nothing that forces him to grow old because whatever happens is under his control. Therefore, God is not old, but he's eternally youthful, and he doesn't change his body. So if you would like to live without changing your body, then worship that personality who doesn't change his body. Don't go for some imaginative iconography of some old guy who's all powerful. That just doesn't work. It's an oxymoron. Old guys are not all powerful. You got it? Say it. Tell me. I'll repeat it. And if you got it, you say, got it. Old guys are not all powerful. Got it? All right. All right. God is eternally youthful, blissful, and imperishable. Like that. So if you want to go and live with that person who has an eternal spiritual body, then you worship him. Because he is in control and he can order time and matter back off. Of course, these bodies that we haven't taken them. They're going to follow the course of nature. They're going to die. But when we drop this body, the Lord orders material nature. This soul does not have to assume another material body. This soul is consumed with love of me. This soul wants only to serve me. So instead of giving him another material body, give him an eternal spiritual body so he can come back to home, back to Godhead, and live with me. Forever. That's probably a good point to stop. What do you think? That's part one. We'll continue with part two.